This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Since Ohio voters passed Issue 1 earlier this month, there have been many questions about how state laws related to reproductive rights will change and whether there will be challenges to the new constitutional amendment by state lawmakers. The constitutional amendment will go into effect December 7th, and some Democratic legislators are calling for the General Assembly to repeal laws they say violate the new amendment. But top Republican leaders are saying the courts will have to make those determinations. Today, we're going to talk about next steps, which existing Ohio laws could be targeted, and how the new amendment could be challenged. Joining me now are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
And Ohio Public Radio, Television, and State House News Bureau reporter and producer, Joe Ingles. Thanks for being here, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
Do you have questions or comments about what's next for Issue 1? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Joe, what will it mean when the new amendment goes into effect on December 7th? Will we see any immediate changes for pregnant patients or providers?
Not really. The amendment sets a constitutional standard by which existing and new laws will be measured. And basically, the constitutional standard is pretty similar to what Ohio has been operating under in recent year, or well, like the recent year. Mm-hmm. We right now almost have up to viability protected with the new constitutional amendment. It goes up to viability. But the thing is that there are laws on the books or laws that could be on the books, specifically the heartbeat bill, for example. That is the 6-week abortion law, and it outlaws abortion at the point fetal cardiac activity can be detected. That is being considered by the Ohio Supreme Court, and it would be the court would have to look at the new amendment and see whether that is consistent with the new amendment. If it rules on it past the time that the amendment goes into effect on December 7th. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the kind of the low hanging fruit that might not, the court might rule that, hey, that wouldn't fit the new amendment. So therefore, we're not going to allow that to go back in place because it's been on hold. But there are a lot of abortion measures that have been on the books that basically put up barriers or make it harder to get abortions. Those might be unconstitutional. The Democrats would like to see a bunch of those rolled into a bill and get a bill passed to immediately get rid of those. The Republicans, however, are saying, nah, we don't want to do that. We'll just let the courts take care of this. So, it's consistent with what we've seen in some other states where the courts are going to have to step in and make a decision as to whether things like the transfer agreements that are the abortion clinics are required to have, in with a hospital in order to perform abortions. They'll have to see if that's, if that kind of thing, if they will be constitutional now. Yeah. And so that's where this goes from here. It's a big court, fight ahead. But as far as people who are looking to get an abortion next month, as opposed to right now, they're not going to notice a lot of difference.
And Joe, what are Democratic lawmakers pushing for first in terms of some of these laws they'd like to see overturned?
Well, obviously, the heartbeat bill. They want that to go away because that would, seemingly, I'm not an expert, Jonathan can talk more about this, but seemingly from looking at the language of the heartbeat bill and looking at the language of the amendment, the heartbeat bill or the 6-week ban, whatever we're calling it these days, that would be unconstitutional. But they also want to see the things like the transfer agreements go away because those are very difficult to, and they don't apply to other ambulatory clinics. It's a kind of a special thing for abortion clinics. They would like to see those go away. They would like to see things that restrictions that apply only to abortion clinics go away. There's a whole host of things they'd like to see, but I don't think they're going to see any of them with this legislature. And in fact, what we've seen is already this legislature is proposing bills. Like, for example, there's one that gives more money, more tax breaks, actually, to these pregnancy distress centers that you call and they kind of bring in people who might be seeking an abortion, and then they try to get them to go ahead and carry the pregnancy. That's one bill under consideration, and there's others being talked about that could be put forward that, you know, may or may not be constitutional. So that's where they go.
Yeah. Jonathan, which laws on the books in Ohio would you think would be declared unconstitutional with the passage of Issue 1? Joe mentioned the so-called heartbeat bill. Is that one that you think would, looks like it would definitely be unconstitutional with the passage of this constitutional amendment?
The heartbeat bill is probably the most vulnerable law on the books right now. But how exactly that's going to play out remains to be seen. Keep in mind that there is already a case pending in the Ohio Supreme Court where the claim was that even without Issue 1, the Ohio Constitution protected some kind of right to abortion. The Supreme Court isn't addressing the merits of that claim. It's got some procedural questions, but last week the court asked the parties to submit briefs explaining what impact they think the passage of Issue 1 will have on this case. And so we'll have to see what the court does with that, but keep in mind that one of the issues in the case that's before the Supreme Court now has to do with whether abortion providers themselves have legal standing to challenge abortion restrictions. That question, I think, will remain even if Issue 1 seems pretty clearly to make the heartbeat law unconstitutional, because the court isn't going to make a ruling at any point on the constitutionality of the heartbeat law unless the case is brought by some challenger who does have legal standing. So I think we need to wait to see what the court says on the standing question, because that could make a difference about how these cases that might come down and come along in the future will play out and how quickly they will play out. One of the reasons that the providers claim to have standing and why most courts that have looked at the issue have suggested that providers have standing is that they deal with these restrictions. They're subject to these restrictions all the time. Whereas if the court were to say that only a pregnant patient has legal standing to sue, then it's going to be a little more complicated to tee up a lawsuit, even if the lawsuit has really strong constitutional claims.
Yeah, just because of the time constraints of a 6-week time frame. Jonathan, I want to talk some more about the Republican response to the passage of Issue 1. There was a move to overthrow the judicial branch's authority over the amendment, and one lawmaker proposed giving state lawmakers exclusive authority over implementing Issue 1. How would that work legally?
Well, let's begin by noting that this was a kind of a symbolic move by a handful of legislators, none of whom has any legal training. And Joe can confirm this, but as I understand it, they don't actually have a bill. They haven't introduced anything. They just put out this announcement. It's kind of like they're 15 minutes in the spotlight. But I think that if somehow such a bill were produced and it passed, and by the way, the House Speaker has thrown cold water on the idea, and so for that matter has Governor DeWine. But, you know, let's assume that somehow this were to pass. I think it would be vulnerable on a variety of problem, or it would have a variety of problems under both the state constitution and the federal constitution. I mean, you can't really say that the constitution protects some kind of right like reproductive freedom, as with issue one, and then say, but no court can hear a case that is designed to enforce that right. You know, we can go all the way back at least to 1803, when Chief Justice Marshall wrote, it is emphatically the province and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. Now, there may be, you know, it may be that the legislature has some authority to tinker with the jurisdiction of the courts. I don't think we need to get into that, but I think it is pretty clear the legislature can't just tell the courts to go jump in Lake Erie, that they have nothing to say about an important part of the Constitution. But as I said, I very much doubt that we're going to see a bill, and I would be really surprised if the bill passed. So I think this is more of a kind of symbolic argument than anything else right now.
Joe, where has that gone? Has there been any more to that after that initial press release about that idea?
Well, they put out the press release and they kind of outlined some of the things that they thought were low-hanging fruit that could be easily dealt with. But the bill has, as Jonathan Enten's telling you, the bill has not been actually put out in bill form yet. Now, whether it will be and when it will be is a big question. But here's the thing. This is going to also, in addition to courts, this is going to have the court of public opinion weighing in on it again, because next year is a big political year. And so candidates are going to be speaking to this. The benefit of having a bill could be that the legislature doesn't follow the bill and it seemingly has things that the public thinks, oh, well, those are really good ideas. That could actually end up helping some Democratic candidates. So, I mean, I could see a reason why they might put out a bill, even knowing that it would get shot down. Jonathan's right that there's no indication from the leadership in the House or the Senate that they will follow through and get rid of any of the existing laws. And I'm sure Governor DeWine has said that, you know, basically this is something that the court should be handling. Mm.
We're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. And later in this program, we'll hear from film critic T.T. Stern-Enzi about some of his favorite movie trilogies. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Voters' passage of Issue 1 earlier this month means that reproductive rights and abortion access will be enshrined in Ohio's Constitution. Today, we're talking about what that means for the state's many laws related to abortion. My guests are Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law, Jonathan Enten, and Ohio Public Radio and Television Statehouse News Bureau reporter and producer, Joe Ingles. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Jonathan, before the break, we were talking about this case that's in the Ohio Supreme Court right now related to Ohio's six-week abortion ban. With that law and really all these other laws on the books that are related to abortion access and reproductive rights, what will the process look like to determine what's in and what's out? Will all these laws ultimately have to go to the Ohio Supreme Court?
In one way or another, perhaps that will be the situation, but there are any number of ways that could happen. For example, we were talking about standing earlier, but some appropriate plaintiff, whether it's a provider or a patient, could file a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of some abortion restriction, and that would play itself out. It would start as the heartbeat law case started in the Common Pleas Court in Hamilton County in that instance, and it's worked its way to the Ohio Supreme Court. Another possibility is that people might not necessarily challenge laws up front. They may just decide that they're going to do what they think is appropriate. And then if somebody comes after them, a local prosecutor or the state medical board or somebody like that, they might set up the unconstitutionality of the restriction as a defense to any legal process. There are advantages and disadvantages to either course. I'm not involved in any of those discussions. I don't know what people are thinking, but it seems to me that yes, one way or another, we're going to be looking at cases where the validity of particular abortion restrictions will be in question. Now, it's possible that once we have several of these cases seemingly pointing in a consistent direction, it's possible that we won't have literally every restriction being challenged, and it's even possible that the state might ease up on some of the existing restrictions and look for other kinds of restrictions that they think might be more likely to survive now that the Ohio Constitution has this reproductive rights amendment.
Joe, I know some Republican lawmakers are now talking about legislation that would implement a 15-week ban, possibly with exceptions for rape and incest. But as we've talked about, issue one has language in it that guarantees the right to an abortion up to viability, which is long after 15 weeks. Have you heard lawmakers talk much about how those two things, you know, how they could promote or implement a 15-week ban when issue one has this language in it about viability?
Well, what they're talking about when they talk about that is there's a federal effort to have 15 weeks. And they, you know, some people are saying, well, maybe Ohio should adopt that. But of course, if Ohio does adopt that, they would have to go back to the ballot. And we know that they're not going back to the ballot anytime soon, because the governor and the legislative leaders are said, we're not going to do that. It would be a difficult thing to get enough people to get onto a 15-week ban, because a lot of the anti-abortion forces are saying, no, we do not want 15 weeks. We just want to ban it all the way out, you know. And here's the other thing. If you look at abortion data, pull up the Ohio abortion report, you will see that the vast majority of abortions in Ohio are done prior to 15 weeks. So if you had a 15-week ban and it had an exception for the health and life of the mother in it, you conceivably could have every abortion protected in Ohio anyway, when you look at the data.
Jonathan, you know, we've talked about how lawmakers expect many of these questions to be answered in the courts. What are some of the things courts will need to consider when they determine what would be allowed and what won't be allowed after the passage of Issue 1? You've talked a little bit about standing. What are some of these other factors that courts will have to consider?
Well, there also will be other kinds of procedural or jurisdictional issues, like not just standing, but timing. Is the plaintiff in court too soon, for example? But I think most of these cases will not really turn on procedural and jurisdictional issues. A lot of them are going to turn on the actual language of Issue 1. Issue 1, as Joe says, draws a line at viability and says that before viability, the state is allowed to regulate abortion only on the basis of sound, health-based evidence and that suggests that the particular restriction is the least restrictive means of promoting the state's interest. So that will leave room for argument about some of the restrictions, maybe, for example, about the transfer agreement provision. I don't think it leaves much, that language leaves much room for the heartbeat law. But I think down the road, that's where we're going to see courts focusing. Now, after viability, issue one does say that the state can prohibit or restrict abortion, but it must allow for abortion for at least it, where the treating physician believes that an abortion is in the best interest of the patient in terms of life and health. So there may also be room for some litigation over what is an acceptable post-viability abortion, particularly if the state stays with the 22-week ban, even though the overwhelming majority of abortions in Ohio, as Joe points out, take place well before that point. There are some situations in which an abnormality doesn't manifest until much later, and then the question is going to be, would the state prohibit abortions in those situations when they are technically perhaps in a post-viability point?
What about the 24-hour waiting period? That's also been something that's been discussed, I know, in other states. Do you think, Joe, is that something that state Democrats are talking about, or is that in the mix right now?
Yes, they have talked about trying to get rid of that 24-hour waiting period, saying that it is a barrier to abortion for many women who can't afford to make the trip to get an abortion. They'd have to go in under current law. They have to go in. They have to have a consult. They have to wait 24 hours, then go back. And they're saying that that's very expensive and very difficult for some women, particularly if they're people who don't have a transportation, or maybe they don't have a lot of funds for a hotel overnight or something like that. So that is one of the things that Democrats would like to get rid of. We'll have to see if and when a bill comes out, if that remains on the list, but they have talked about that for sure.
Joe, what's next for lawmakers? You mentioned this proposed bill that seeks to encourage more donations to pregnancy resource centers. Is that an indication of some measures lawmakers are proposing that seek to reduce the amount of abortions performed in Ohio, but maybe wouldn't be unconstitutional?
Yes, that's one of the things that they're looking at. There also, there's been some talk about maybe increasing insurance, causing abortions to cost more. But then that's going to land you in court. So I think the things they're going to be looking at right now are things that they can easily do to try to either, help pregnancy distress centers, help, anti-abortion forces with some of the work that they do. That's what they're going to be looking at right now.
Jonathan, what do you see as being next for the Ohio Supreme Court? Based on the makeup of the court, do you expect the court to challenge issue one in some way?
Well, I don't think that the court could simply read issue one out of the Constitution. I think that for cases, for regulations like transfer agreements, things that are not as apparently clear-cut as the heartbeat law, I think that there may be some room for the court to read issue one narrowly and maybe uphold some of those restrictions. And a court that has a majority of justices who are skeptical about abortion might take that route. But I can't really envision anybody on the Ohio Supreme Court looking at issue one and saying that the heartbeat law, for example, is consistent with the Ohio Constitution. I could envision the opinion from at least some of the justices saying, well, we don't approve of issue one, or we don't If we were left to our own devices, we would rule differently. But we've taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the law really dictates that we reach this conclusion. That might have implications for how broadly or narrowly the court will interpret issue one in other cases. But I think in the clear-cut cases, it seems to me that the court would do what it ought to do, which is to say that this provision, like the heartbeat law, it just cannot possibly be squared with the language of issue one, and so we have to strike it down.
Well, I've been talking with Case Western Reserve University Professor Emeritus of Law Jonathan Enten and Ohio Public Radio and Television State House News Bureau reporter and producer Joe Ingles. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks, Lucy.
Up next, we'll hear from film critic T.T. Stern Enzi about some of his favorite movie trilogies. This is Cincinnati Edition.